Welcome to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. Everyone, thank you for spending this happy, happy Sunday afternoon with us here. As you know, we try to continue to talk about various wellness topics, and that includes a very broad spectrum of things. Sheena, this past semester, you've been able to help us get a lot bigger variety of wellness topics.
I had been telling you off air that sometimes you get creative in the clutch and it brings about some great things, because we've had some awesome campus partners that have come on. I have been more educated in terms of some of the services that are offered and how faculty staff can be involved, and so not just necessarily the students. So, I mean, I've selfishly enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, yes, it's one of the things that when I'm looking at potential guests, it's like things that I'm interested in personally and want to learn more about. And so it's been, but this semester's been especially exciting and interesting. I noticed, just side note, I don't know if you noticed it or not, but I was just scrolling around the internet earlier, mm-hmm. and saw where Coach Murphy got his who was our guest a few weeks ago, got his 1,000th career victory,
yes,
the other night, which is outstanding.
I know. I thought about, you know, in just a just in an homage to him sharing that, just the show that we did with him, I'm like, I'm going to put this on my social media later,
right,
and use the excuse of celebrating, you know, his thousandth win. So that is amazing, because obviously there's not too many people that can say they can do that.
Not at all. Like I said, he's a legend in his own time. And in true Patrick Murphy fashion, you watch the video on Facebook celebrating it, and he is not on the video anywhere.
Really?
It's all his team. It's like highlights from all of his games, mm-hmm. which is, you know, one of the things that we kept talking about him is his humility and what I thought was so great. And he, you know, it's funny, a video about his 1,000th victory, and he's not in the entire video at all.
Well, I had told you a few days ago, I think it was this past Friday, I actually got to my first softball game against South Carolina. So that was the perfect game to go to. I had a former client that had hooked me and my husband up with some very good seats. So that was a nice way.
Right.
So, you know, even if I was in the brick house, that would have been a perfect opportunity too. So
There's not a bad seat in
no,
that place.
Not
I mean,
at all.
Yeah, you can't beat watching a softball game sitting out on the grass in the outfield.
No. Yeah, the weather was perfect.
Yeah, it was a good night. We have a very – I can't tell you when I started looking over what we're going to talk about today. I know we get into this tease right before the break here, but looking through some of these things that we're going to talk about, I could not be more interested in this. And, you know, when you tie this into wellness, you know, we look at that wellness spectrum, mm-hmm. You know, how do you see it fitting into the different categories?
Well, you know, honestly, I think that, you know, even in just some of the most obvious ways, we get so much of our health information through various avenues. You know, it's not necessarily going to a healthcare provider anymore, but it's using our computer. And
right.
And so there's an obvious connection there, but I think that there's also a part of just our health and well-being in general when we are protecting such vital information about ourselves.
Right. Yeah, I think so many people, one of the things that we've talked about before is getting good information and knowing that you're getting good information. And I know that's one of the things that we're going to, you know, one of the topics that we're going to at least discuss a little bit on here is, you know, getting knowing that you're getting good information, getting it from a safe place and a reputable place.
Yes, I feel like people are going to get very inspired and probably take some action after listening to the show this afternoon. But we have got to take a break. We hope that you are going to stick around with us this afternoon as we talk about cybersecurity. But you are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone, and we will catch you after the break.
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. And we are back continuing, or about to start our conversation, actually, with Mr. Ashley Ewing from the Office of Information Technology. And lots of good information that we have to cover this afternoon. And I'm so excited about it. And Ashley, thanks for being with us.
No problem.
We know, you have to be very, very busy with what you do. I can't think of a more important job on our campus than what you do. Can you just give us a little bit? My son, who's a junior in high school, is very interested in a career in computers. So this is a natural question. I talked to him this morning. I was like, the first thing I'm going to ask you is, how did you get into doing what you do and into the position that you're in?
Sure. Well, prior to coming here to the university, I worked at Bell South, Southern Bell, for 34 years. So I've been in information technology since 1972. And about 17 years into that, we actually had a case where we had some hackers break into some systems, got to go out on search warrants with the Secret Service, and got interested in security at that particular point in time. So helped form a security team there at Bell South to start investigating security for all of our different computers and so forth we had there. Expanded quite a bit, and then when I retired from Bell South, I knew I wasn't going to retire. Mm-hmm. So I was looking for somewhere that I could take the information that I learned at Bell South and apply it to another area, and the job here at the University of Alabama was absolutely perfect. So I'm the first CISO here at the University of Alabama, been here about 9.5 years, and I've been working on building a security team and a security infrastructure over that time, and it's been a lot of fun. I have really, really enjoyed working here.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, this is good information for a son who wants to make video games. I'm trying to push him into taking advantage of maybe making a little bit more money than just actually not living in our basement the rest of his life. But thank you for that.
And Ashley, you know, working in the Student Health Center, I've had the opportunity to hear you come and talk to various groups on campus. And, you know, we've been throwing around the term cyber security just throughout the show. And when I've seen you do other presentations, can you kind of tell us a little bit more about what that entails and how does it really affect our listeners?
Sure. Everyone has data that they're trying to protect, whether it's a business or whether it's a university or whether it's an individual. So it's very important that you understand where you have sensitive data and what your definition of sensitive data would be. Or perhaps an older couple, it may be all their investment data. Mm-hmm. It could be their tax returns. It could be very, very valuable pictures of their family that would be impossible to replace. Maybe some recipes that have been in the family forever. So it varies depending on how important it is to a particular individual. At the university, we have a lot of research data. We have a lot of data on employees and a data on students that has to be protected. So you have to understand what you're trying to protect and where that data is located, or you're never going to have a fighting chance to be able to protect that information.
Would you say that there's a lot of data out there that we don't necessarily, if we're able to identify these things, do we actually have control ourselves over being able to protect the security of it, or are we at the mercy of, you know, other people and other agencies?
To some extent, you're at the mercy of a lot of other agencies. The data that you maintain yourself, the data that you have on your personal devices, whether it's a phone or a tablet or a PC or whatever it might be, you have a lot of control over that by being able to put things like antivirus software to monitor for malicious activity, backing up your data. I can't stress backing up your data enough, and we'll talk about that more later as to why you need to do that. And then making sure that you keep all your patches up to date on all the software. That's usually where the software vendors are fixing security bugs with all these patch releases that come out. So you're at the mercy of others when you give your information to other entities, like something as simple as Gmail in the cloud. Now, every email you send is sitting on a server somewhere across the world. And so you need to be mindful of that when you're sending information and think about the type of information that you may be sending. It's encrypted when you transmit it, but it's not encrypted when it's stored on their server. So there's the potential there that it could be sitting on a server somewhere that someone may have access to. Same thing with iCloud, Google Docs, and so forth. A lot of those file services or cloud storage services, not only encrypt in transit, but they also encrypt in storage. And that's something very important to look for, is to make sure that they can't see your data, that it is protected up there in those servers. Did that kind of help a little bit?
Yes, it absolutely does.
I'm sorry. I'm like listening and then I'm like thinking of all of these questions. And yeah. I was curious, Ashley, with just people using social media more and more, have you seen a correlation in a prevalence of people being at risk with just use of social media in general, and you know, and hackers or bad guys using that as a venue for getting to people?
Very much so. The social media environment has created a very, very open culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, the internet in itself created an open enough culture that we have to deal with the information that's out on the internet. But social media has made it instantaneous. Mm-hmm. And so people need to be aware of what they post and where they post and what they do, because once it's out on the internet, it's there forever. So I would never put any personal information out there, any personally identifiable information, any sensitive information out there. Always be very, very aware of that. But yes, social media has contributed quite a bit to an open environment, but we have to be aware of the type of data that we're putting out in that open environment.
Sure, sure.
Well, speaking of it staying out there, you're throwing so much good information at us here, and a lot of it's already over my head, and we're just getting started here. But just as an FYI for our listeners, you know, our shows are archived on wvuafm.ua.edu, and if you'll scroll down the page to Audio Boom, the shows are archived, so you can go back, and if you want to, I know me personally, I'm going to when we get this one archived, I'm going to come back and listen to it and try to take all this in, you know, a lot more slowly. May have to look a few things up, but this is, you know, just really so much good information.
I agree. I mean, you know, when you think about how much people are connected to their phones, whether they are sitting at dinner with a significant other or a friend, and they're not even engaging in conversation, and they're on their phone sharing whatever kind of information is out there, and you certainly see people, you know, we were just talking about social media. I remember seeing a post one time where it was somebody had prompted everyone to type in, like, name all of the names of your pets. And then someone said, no, don't do that, because that'll give people an idea of what that password could be. And I know we're going to go more in depth in conversation about passwords as well. So there's so much we can do with this. Ashley, I will guarantee you, we will probably invite you again in the future for spin-off topics from all of this. But We've got a full afternoon, you guys, and we hope that you continue to join us, but we have got to take a break. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone.
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. And we're continuing our conversation this afternoon with Mr. Ashley Ewing, who is the Chief Information Security Officer for the Office of Information Technology. That is a mouthful of a title. So I think we obviously know how what you do is so important around here. But we were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, careers potentially in this type of field. And since a lot of our listeners are students, can you tell us, you know, like, academically, you know, or, you know, potential careers, some things that to consider if you're interested in this sort of thing?
Absolutely. There is a big gap in very skilled technical security people and the number of jobs out there. There is more than enough work for people to do in the security environment. And it can be anything from being as specialized as working on security for the development of software. Mm-hmm. So if you're writing a social app or you're writing an application for a server that a business is going to use, there could be people dedicated to just monitoring and managing the security and that software that's being built alone. Managing and securing our networks is could be another specialty. So having a network background and then understanding the security components of that network background, just like understanding application development, but then understanding application development from what could a bad guy do with this application?
Right.
How could they make it vulnerable and break into that application and steal data? data itself, database management systems or data storage systems, how can you make sure that that data is adequately protected? And so then having a background in database management systems or data protection along with networking and servers, and then understanding the security components associated with that. So you see a theme here. There needs to be a base technical background, either in networking or systems or data or something along those lines. And then you add on top of it, what are the components that I need to worry about that someone would try to take advantage of? How could someone steal our data? How could someone break into the system? How could someone misuse the system for malicious purposes? So the base thing is a good technical background, and then add the security on top of it, if that makes sense.
Right. The you have to have that, and you have to be able to think like a criminal.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
Well, you know, clearly for, you know, different businesses and organizations, the security piece would be a high priority level for them. So would you say that this career field, it could we use the word lucrative for these types of positions?
It is. It's not unusual for a well-seasoned CISO to make a very, very nice salary, especially in the corporate world. Mm-hmm. It's been several years ago, but I remember I was at a CISO conference and someone was talking about a position was open, and they said I wouldn't touch that for less than $200,000 a year. And I'm going, well, that's relatively lucrative to some certain individuals. So there, if you're talented, if you have some background, some skills, and some experience and so forth, it can be very lucrative.
Right.
Because there is so much that goes into it, so much knowledge that has to go into it.
Right. Well, we see so many, you hear on the news, on the national news about, you know, so many different cyber threats and, you know, breaches. And my wife actually mentioned to me the other day about she has an account with somebody, and there were a group of accounts that were hacked, you give me the correct terminology here, but, you know, it was something we received a letter in the mail about it, that ours could potentially have been one of those that, you know, and that we needed to keep an eye on our account and that sort of thing. Can you talk about some of those that, you know, that have happened recently, why they've had, you know, your knowledge of why they happened and that sort of thing?
I can. I'll try not to get too deep down in the weeds on some of this, but let's take credit cards, for example.
Sure.
Credit cards is a big threat. That's money. People go after money. And so the way the credit card theft has evolved over time, even within the last 8 years, people used to store credit cards on servers, so the bad guys break into the servers and steal the credit cards. And then industry comes out and says, don't store the credit cards, only put it in memory. Took the bad guys a couple of years to figure out how to write software that would scan memory and pull the credit cards out of memory. Most of the credit card break-ins we've seen recently with Target, Home Depot, Arby's, Wendy's, all these others that are in the press, is because they've written very specialized software that's doing memory scanning and pulling the credit card information out of memory and stealing that data. It's a very sophisticated break-in. You don't just walk up to a card reader in a Wendy's or something and install your software. They actually go through a phishing exercise that hopefully we'll talk about in a moment, and then they phish an individual, they get access to the network, and they do the installation from the inside. So it's kind of an insider type attack by using stolen credentials. All the way up to stealing medical records and medical information, it's very valuable for either bribery or for selling on the open market, selling insurance on the open market. And then the most recent one that you've seen with Yahoo and some of the others, I used to laugh at this one because they're stealing IDs and passwords, and I'm going, why do you want to steal IDs and passwords? 1 billion IDs and passwords from Yahoo.
Right.
And so we actually saw situations on campus where users use the same ID and password for multiple systems. Mm. The bad guys are counting on that.
Sure.
And so we had situations where we literally locked accounts because we didn't want the bad guys to maliciously access certain individual's account, because they'd stolen information from LinkedIn and Snapchat and Twitter and some of the others, not Twitter but Tumblr. And so we could see them actually using those same IDs and passwords to access accounts here on campus. Locked them all. The only reason we locked them was not to be mean. It just forces the user to change their password, so now the bad guy doesn't have the password anymore.
Right.
So passwords are just really not sufficient to protect our most sensitive information any longer. You really have to have two-factor or multi-factor authentication to protect that data.
That makes sense. Yeah. I'd never thought about that before with people stealing, you know.
I know. I'm sitting here paranoid. I'm like, okay, what do I need to change after the show today? But actually, I remember a time listening to you before. I think you had talked about a breach with TJ Maxx before. Can you tell us a little bit about, because I feel like that was a unique situation with how the bad guys were getting the information from TJ Maxx consumers.
Sure. So that is a poster child break-in for the payment card industry standards that they had to put in place, because it kind of brought to the forefront a lot of different vulnerabilities that a lot of different companies had. So basically, TJ Maxx and some of its stores had open wireless networks that they were using where individuals could connect to their networks from the parking lot and of different stores, and they can actually see the clear text credit card transactions going by. So for several years, they were stealing credit card data this way. And this was one of the first major credit card breaches, and it actually caused an awful lot of the standards that we see today on protecting credit card information. Like, number one, we talked about don't store them on computers. Well, don't send them on the network in clear text. Encrypt that information that you're sending along. And that's a very fundamental thing. Try not to send it on wireless networks. Only send it on your wired networks to your wired computers. If you do, again, it needs to be encrypted. So making sure that you protect that credit card information is crucial. But TJ Maxx, like I say, was a poster child. Mm-hmm. It generated an awful lot of the standards and requirements we have today for protecting credit card information.
Yeah. About how long ago was that? Do you happen to remember what year that was?
I want to say it was 2006, 2007 timeframe, somewhere back in there.
Okay. I'm sure me and my mom shopping at TJ Maxx in 2006 and 2007, but
it's funny. Yeah, you talk about the back then and those the I guess the low tech days. I remember about 7 or 8 years ago. This is the one time, knock on wood, the one time something like this has happened to me. I won't say the fast food restaurant, but I drive through. I give them my credit card. My wife is always like, no, don't ever, you know, don't use a credit card, get cash out. So I give them my credit card. We're talking low tech here. She walks off with my credit card and comes back just a couple minutes later, swipes it. I thought she was going off to do something. Within 3 hours, $800 worth of cell phones had been purchased on my credit card.
Wow.
Fortunately, a credit card company called me and got my money back. But it is one of those things that, you know, you go 7 or 8 years ago, they're doing that to the things that you're talking about doing. It's kind of amazing.
Skimming's still a problem. I mean, every restaurant you go to, the waiter disappears, waitress disappears with your credit card.
Right.
You go to Europe and do that. They bring a machine out in front of you. You swipe the card. And so you're beginning to see that a little bit more in this country, but it's very, very prevalent in Europe that they do that.
Ooh,
that's interesting. I've never seen that before.
I like that transparency. Oh, my goodness. Well, I hope you all are not getting paranoid, but feeling very well-informed and you know, feeling like this is really going to help in just your cyber security and cyber health overall. We are continuing our wonderful conversation with Ashley. We've got a ton of different topics that we want to enjoy the rest of the afternoon, but we've got to take another break. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone.
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone, and we're continuing our conversation this afternoon on a great topic, something that's been so interesting so far, talking about cybersecurity with Mr. Ashley Ewing from the Office of Information Technology. And Sheena, I know this is something for you, working at the Student Health Center, with the way you keep up with patient records, and to us, to a certain extent, at the Student Rec Center with our personal training, we have to be very careful with confidential information on our personal training clients. But I know it's probably a lot bigger deal for you. I know it's a lot bigger deal for you guys.
Most definitely. You know, I think when I think about our staff's collaboration with Ashley's office as it relates to our electronic medical record, and, you know, they're always so diligent about reminding us, like, when we need to log off, if there's going to be some type of of patch or fix that's going to be happening overnight. And so when we've had Ashley as a guest, that's really reinforced me being more compliant with it, because there's probably been times where I'm like, oh, my computer will be fine. It doesn't really have to be off. So now, you know, getting to be exposed to Ashley more and more and really realizing how important these things are, it is helpful, because when it comes to health information, and I know, Ashley, you know, I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about ransomware and some of the UA-specific phishing attempts that have happened on campus.
Sure. I think phishing has really become the weapon of choice for most of the bad actors out there. It's if they can get access to your computer by using your credentials, then they're on the inside, and then they can do the things that they need to do. So we see a significant number of phishing attacks on campus. For faculty and staff, we get alerted of about maybe 100, 120 attacks a year. They may go after anywhere from a dozen people to a few thousand people, mm-hmm. depending on how large it is. They can go after anything from just taking IDs and passwords to be able to log in to their email, send out more spam, try to attack other computers, all the way up to trying to trick us into enough information to where they could go in and change our direct deposit information and steal our paycheck. So some of them are more sophisticated than others. Sure. The students have just been absolutely hammered over the last 3 years with phishing attacks. We've seen well over 8,000 compromised accounts in the last 3 years, not just phished, but compromised. Mm-hmm. So they're constantly going after student accounts and trying to get access to those credentials so that they can do whatever they're wanting to do with that information and move on. We talked earlier about some of the credit card break-ins and so forth. A lot of those started with phishing attacks, basic phishing attacks where they steal credentials and now they're on the inside and they can do the things that they want to do. One of the pieces you mentioned, ransomware, one of the things they can do is if they can trick you into putting in maybe something called a backdoor loader, which is a way that they have control of your machine and can download software, they can download something called ransomware. And that's why I emphasize backing up your computer earlier. Ransomware will go into the machine and encrypt all of your normal files, normal user files, and we call it unstructured data. So your Word documents, your Excel spreadsheets, all your pictures, all your Adobe files, it will encrypt all that and then put up a message and say, if you want to see your data again, you have to pay me in Bitcoin. I don't know how many people have Bitcoin accounts, but it's it's legitimate internet currency. A Bitcoin's about $1,000 per Bitcoin, and they will ask you to pay in Bitcoin, so it remains somewhat anonymous. And so we've had situations of ransomware here on campus. So far, we've not paid any ransoms because we have backup data. We could go and reload the individual's information. So at home, make sure you back up your information. Put it in iCloud, put it in Google Docs, put it in whatever you need to put it in to back it up. If you use a thumb drive, plug it in, back it up, unplug it. If you use an external hard drive, plug it in, back it up, and unplug it. If you leave it plugged in, the bad guy will encrypt that data as well, because it's connected to the computer. But the most important thing is making sure you back up all those tax files, those investment files, your grandmother's coconut recipe, whatever's important to you, make sure that you back up all that information so that it's somewhat secure.
How often would you recommend doing that?
It depends on how often the data changes. If it's information that doesn't change, but maybe once a month or once a quarter, then probably the backup can be done right after those changes. Me, for example, I do online. I use Quicken for my banking. And so every two or three times I go and update my Quicken information, I just pop into Drive and back up just my Quicken information. And then I back everything else up maybe once a quarter.
Okay.
Onto a drive. It just depends on how valuable the information is and how often you access or change that information.
Right. Ashley, I know you've mentioned that our students have been quite the victims when it comes to phishing attempts. So what kind of things should folks be looking for, you know, if they think an email might be questionable?
Sure. So there's some things that will tip off an email. First, look at the from address. It's not 100% indicator that it's malicious. But if it supposedly comes from the university, that firm address should end with ua.edu. Mm-hmm. If they claim that it's a UPS email trying to get you to pay some more UPS fees, it should probably say ups.com. Now, that can be spoofed by the bad guy. It can be changed, so it's not a 100% indicator. The other thing is to look for spelling and grammar errors. Some of the old phishing attacks and so forth used to be horrible.
Right.
Well, the bad guys have gotten much better. There are sites that they can go to where they can check the spelling, check the grammar, even make sure that the spelling is correct for the country that they're attacking.
Right.
So they're very sophisticated with that. The hover trick is the most important. If you have a link in there, you need to take your mouse without clicking on it and put the pointer over that link, and a box will pop up, and that will tell you the actual URL that they're really sending you to. So again, if it's from Regions Bank, it should be sending you to a regionsbank.com website and not a Jimdo or a free online web content type of thing. The hover trick can be used on phones. You just have to use your finger, be bold, put your finger on there, and a box will pop up that says open in new tab.
Right.
And at the top of it, it has that URL where it's really going to send you.
Okay.
So if you're suspicious about it, those are a few things you can do. And also, the bad guys very, very rarely give you any contact information. So if you're having trouble with me stealing your identity, please call me here. They very rarely have contact information. So those are some of the things you can look out for.
Okay. No, and that's good to know. And, you know, I think just that hover trick is such a huge game changer, because I think that that's, you know, really helpful for folks. You know, knowing me, sometimes I get nervous about hovering and thinking that in a panic I'm going to hit and click it. But hopefully students don't have nervous fingers like I do.
That's exactly the way I am. That's exactly the way I am when it comes to that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I'm scared to even touch it.
Yeah.
A couple of things. Passwords, big deal. You know, it's hard. So many different accounts, so many different passwords. You know, there's software where you can, you know, use one password. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that in this last couple of minutes that we have here?
Yeah, probably the most important thing is don't forget your password to wherever you're storing your passwords.
Right.
If you're using a tool to do it, make sure that's the one password you remember. But there are tools out there that you can buy, Passkeeper, KeepPass. You can put them in a spreadsheet and encrypt them, but remember that password as well. But the trick to a good complex password is to think of a phrase that's very, very meaningful to you, like my dog is the best dog in the world. And then take the first letter there, change some of the characters that look like special characters. But it's not important that you memorize that gobbledygook that comes out, but you memorize your phrase, and that phrase is very, very meaningful to you if you have to use passwords. But otherwise, really strongly recommend you use multi-factor authentication or two-factor authentication where you can.
Well, you know, it has blown me away just how much information we've been able to cover. And, you know, there's 1,000 more questions that I want to ask. And actually, if it's okay with you, Ashley, would you be okay staying with us for this last piece? We'd love to get you to plug a duo for us, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, we have got to take a break, you guys. So much information. So stick around with us for our last segment. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone.
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone, and we're back here to close out for our last few minutes of the afternoon with Mr. Ashley Ewing from the Office of Information Technology here at the University of Alabama. And thank you for hanging around just another 5 minutes, because we had so many questions to ask you, and you've given us so much great information. Just a couple of other things. You mentioned patching devices. You know, making sure that you do that. Can you go into just a little detail about what people need to do in terms of that sort of thing?
All right. The easiest thing is most operating systems and most software will have a capability to auto patch.
Right.
So it'll automatically receive the patches. Don't turn that off. Allow it to do that. It's very rare that a patch will cause an outage on your software or your machine versus the amount of benefit you gain from the problems that they're fixing. So always allow it to fix it. One question I always get around the little pop-up for Adobe that says patches are ready. And right. once I make people really good and paranoid, they go, well, should I trust that?
Uh-huh.
Well, if you don't, if you don't, close it, open Adobe, go to the help menu, and it says check for updates within the application. So most applications will let you check for updates there. So that's a very, very good point if you're really paranoid about that.
Right. Yeah, that's... This is a good bit of information.
Oh gosh, man! Yeah. I've got my to-do list on the computer later is pretty growing now. Yes, and you know, Ashley, I mentioned a little bit before the last break. Duo, I'd love for you to talk about that. I know that that is something new that has come out for our users on campus. So just expand a little bit about that, just because you know it does relate so much to really protecting our accounts on campus.
Absolutely. I mentioned earlier that passwords are no longer sufficient to protect our sensitive information because we're tricked out of those passwords so easily, or they steal other information from other entities and use that same password over. So you have to resort to multi-factor or a two-step type of authentication. So the two steps are something you know, your ID and your password, and something you have, either your telephone, your smartphone, a phone at your desk, one of the little tokens that has a password that changes every 60 seconds, but it's something you know and something you have. So with Duo, we've been able to implement multi-factor authentication to where you can take your ID and password, and then you can register your phone. You can download the Duo app on your phone by going to duo.ua.edu. Register your phone, download the app, and then when you go to log in, it'll ask you for your ID and password, and then it'll say, okay, here's a Duo prompt. And you can tell it to send you a push, and the push will come to that phone, and then from the phone, you can either approve or deny that login request. So, for example, if you get a request and it says, are you trying to log in right now? Pause for a minute and say, well, yes, I am trying to log in.
Right.
But if it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you're out with your friends and you get a request saying, are you trying to log in from Beijing, China? Pause for a minute and say, no, I don't believe I am, and hit deny.
I know I had a crazy night, but
gather your senses and then realize.
But there's two-step available for Google. There's two-step available for iCloud and for Intuit. A lot of banks require it now. But here on campus, we're really wanting everyone to use Duo. It dramatically reduces the risk of phishing attacks on campus. So even Big Al is a Duo user. You may have seen on the social media where Big Al will log in and he uses all the capabilities we have, both with an app on the phone or receiving a phone call as the second part of authentication, or even entering a passcode. So Big Al's one of our big users.
Yeah, and Big Al's like the most anonymous person on campus, so I am going to trust him as a champion for security and privacy.
I'm going to trust Ashley, but you trust Big Al and we'll...
Yeah, so I think they collaborate together. Oh my gosh, so much information. Ashley, I hope you would be okay with being a repeat guest in the future, because we could continue this conversation all afternoon long. But
thanks so much.
Guys, we've had such a full afternoon talking about cybersecurity. I hope you guys feel well informed from this afternoon show, but we thank you for listening. You have been listening today to Fit to be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone, and we will catch you next week.